It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Beautiful day out there. Appreciate you guys coming again to support and cover Penn State football. We appreciate it. Do a quick review of the previous game and then get into our opponent this week, obviously. Our Idaho offensive players of the week, from the coach's perspective, on offense was Jahan Dotson and Pat Freiermuth. On defense was Cam Brown and John Reed. And then on special teams was Jordan Stout and Jonathan Sutherland. So, really excited about those guys, what they were able to do on Saturday. Want to continue to build on that. The injury of the Buffalo player, Evan, you never want to see that happen in college football or really any sports. I got a chance to go over and see the family and the young man, and seems to be doing well in good spirits. I think that kicker specialist long snapper community is tight. They all know each other, so a bunch of our guys were over there supporting him as well. So we wish him and his family nothing but the best and a speedy recovery. Obviously this game, we're excited about the opportunity, excited about, obviously from a historical perspective, what this game has meant to this state and the college football. From a geographical perspective, we get it as well. The same discussion that comes up all the time is, how we approach these games, and we don't approach them any different. That will never change. Do we understand that this is a big game to the media and to the fans and to the lettermen and to college football? Yeah. We're not burying our heads in the sand. We understand the significance and the impact of this game, but our approach does not change. We believe Sunday through Friday that we are going to prepare the same week in and week out. It doesn't matter who you're playing or what you're doing or where the game is going to be played or what the weather is going to be like. None of those things change. So we're excited about the opportunity to play Pitt on Saturday in our stadium. Obviously, we need our fans to create a really, really challenging environment. We have an opportunity to have a distinct home field advantage. At our place. We've averaged 104,000 for the first two games. We need that thing to be busting at the seams. I think we've had as high as 110. We need that on Saturday, and we need the players on the field to feel that 110,000. I want everybody in the state to feel that 110,000. So, we are blessed and we are fortunate to play at Penn State. We are blessed and fortunate to have the type of support and fan base that we have. We need that stadium rocking on Saturday at 12 o'clock like no stadium's ever rocked before. So that's my challenge. We got to do this together. Obviously, Coach Narduzzi, got a lot of respect for him as a football coach. He's done a phenomenal job. That team has taken on his personality. They are physical. They are tough. They are hard-nosed. Obviously, that shows up on the defensive side of the ball, the style of defense that they play. He's been doing it for a long time and been doing it at a high level for a while there. There was a period of time in college football, probably 4 to 6 years where, everybody was, trying to copycat their style of defense, what he's done at Pitt and what they did at Michigan State. But obviously has done a tremendous job. Obviously you look at, his success at Pitt and you look at two significant upsets over Miami and over Clemson, the number two ranked teams in the country. They're gonna be used to playing these types of games in these types of environment. 15 starters returning. you know, you also get into this situation with, you know, new NCAA rules and guys leaving one program and going to another. So we have a young man that was part of our program for 4 years, John Patrician, who's now at Pitt. So when that happened, you know, we knew that we were going to have to make some changes at that point. So we have changed. We didn't wait till this week to do it. We did it right when that was announced, but obviously we had to change all of our signals, you know, especially on defense and on offense as well, but especially on defense, because he knows all of our signals and those types of things. So that was something we had to do right away. You know, obviously, again, talking about, you know, this game meaning a lot to people, you know, we got guys like Marcus Allen, who's with the Pittsburgh Steelers and obviously in that facility all the time, so he's going to hear it. It's going to be very, very important to him. Me and Marcus have talked a bunch already. We'll continue to talk all week long. You got Tom Bradley that's there. Obviously, this game's going to be really important to him, so he can walk around town and walk around that facility. But I'm going to talk to Tom all week long, and then John Norwig as well. So those guys, I know it's extra important to them based on where they're at. But you know, we'll see how that goes. Kind of get into offensively. You know, Mark Whipple, a guy that's been in the profession for a long time, very well known and respected. You know, Mark's been a offensive coordinator or head coach almost in the entirety of his career. Him and Coach Spence worked together at UMass for a number of years and has done a great job and has got great experience. Yeah, I think you're still going to see Pat Narduzzi's personality all over that offense in terms of running the football, but obviously Mark's got great experience both in the run game and in the pass game. Five returners starting on that side of the ball. There are multiple formations, multiple personnel groups, tempos. You know, fullback will be involved as well. They're going to play with an extra tackle. You know, so they'll have six offensive linemen on the field. They'll go 11 personnel. They'll go 22 personnel. They'll go 21 personnel. We've been impressed by Kenny Pickett, A.J. Davis, Maurice French, and Taysier Mack. Taysier, you know, started his career at Indiana and has now been at Pitt for the last 2 years. Randy Bates. Obviously, again, you know, got a lot of respect for this defense, how they play. He also was at Northwestern before that. We got a lot of respect for Northwestern and their program and what they do on the defensive side of the ball. Six starters returning there. Base front, they're a 4-3 defense. They will go to a three-down defense on third and five or more, shows up there. And then coverage, you know, they're what we call a cover four quarters defense, where the four defensive backs will all have a quarter of the field. A lot of times they'll play press on the two outside receivers, be very aggressive at the line of scrimmage, very hands-on, you know, very, very physical at the line of scrimmage. And then they'll play variations of some fire zone coverages as well. We've been impressed with Mr. Twyman, the defensive tackle, Kylan Johnson, a linebacker number 28, their cornerback number 11, Dane Jackson, and then obviously we're very familiar with Damar Hamlin and Paris Ford through the recruiting process and what they've done at Pitt so far. And then special teams, I think it's been one of the strengths of their team really for the last 4 years. Andre Powell, who I know very well, does a great job with them on special teams. They got four starters returning in those units in terms of specialists. So got a lot of respect for Andre and what they do, you know, playing complementary football there. So that's my notes. I didn't mention, I apologize, the special teams player of the week last week was Isaac Lutz. So I apologize for missing Mr. Lutz. Played extremely well, is doing some really, really good things, and there's a lot of excitement and buzz in our program about Isaac and what he brings to our team, specifically in special teams. He's a guy that wants to own that. That's where he knows he can make the most significant impact on our team, and is doing a tremendous job with that right now.
Rich Scarsella, Reading Eagle.
Good afternoon, James.
Hey, Rich.
Why was Buffalo so successful on third down, and how can the defense improve in those situations?
Yeah, I think, first of all, they're very well coached. They got a really good plan. I think a lot of their third down success came from early first and second down success. They were going to run the ball. Even if they got 2-3 yards, they were going to try to stay on schedule as much as they possibly could. It's interesting when you watch the game, you know, we hit our run goal of yards per attempt in the running game, but they were able to stay on schedule. So they created a bunch of third and shorts, third and manageable situations where they had the ability to run or pass. They also kept their tight ends and backs in, or they slow released them and chipped them out on the way out, so we weren't able to get consistent pressure on the quarterbacks. One of the first times that I can remember in a long time where we lost the sack battle. Our defense does such a good job of creating pressure on the quarterback. But I thought they had a really good plan, and they executed really well for that first half. We were able to make some adjustments at halftime. We got to be able to make those adjustments with a young team throughout the game, in between series. We can't wait to halftime to go in, but that's what it took with this young team. And then once we were able to come out with some adjustments made, with explaining to them what they were doing and how they were trying to do it, really in all three phases, then I thought we were able to make some progress in the second half and grow.
Derek LaVar, Wilkes-Barre Times leader.
Hi, James. How are you?
Hey, Derek.
James, what kind of progress have you seen from the wide receiver group in the early going, and how important is it for them to get off that aggressive press at the line that Pittle showed them?
Yeah, I think that's a big battle in this game, our wide receivers versus their defensive backs and how physical they play at the line of scrimmage. Obviously, we got three different, you know, wide receivers that are starting for us, and Justin Shorter is 230 pounds, and then you got obviously KJ Hamler Jahan Dotson, excuse me, that aren't 230 pounds. So they're all going to have to win differently. And then we got other guys that we're going to rotate in there as well. But that's going to be a big battle in this game, is how our guys are able to get off of press, how our guys are going to be physical in the running game as well. That's going to be a big challenge in this game. But I like how our wide receivers are progressing. They're playing with a lot of confidence right now. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're more experienced. And I think Jared does a great job from a fundamental and a technique standpoint, but also culturally. He's done a really good job, you know, just with that room, their mentality, their approach, in a lot of different things. So I'm very pleased with that group, but we're going to need them to play well on Saturday. That'll be a big challenge. As we know, Coach Narduzzi and this defense, they do not want you to run the ball. They don't want you to run for 1 yard with how they play their box, trying to get that field backer into the box, folding him back in late as much as possible. And those safeties are downhill run support guys that are going to add on. And then obviously they're playing pretty much press man at the corners. So it's a challenge. It's an in-your-face style of defense. The linebackers are downhill as soon as they get their reads, which makes it difficult to stay on double teams. Your offensive linemen have to come off and climb on the linebacker quickly. That's part of their design. That's what they want you to do. It's a good scheme. There's no doubt about it. And we're excited for the challenge.
Mark Wilgenrich, Allentown Morning Call.
Hi, James. How are you?
Good, Mark. How are you?
Good, thanks. You mentioned changing signals earlier. How long did that take to do for the coaching staff, and how long did it take for your players to learn that?
Well, if we would have waited to this week, it would have been problematic. I don't think you wait, you know, until this week. It's no different. You guys, you know, have been coming to practice all during camp. If you wait to deal with crowd noise the week of a game like this, it's going to be a problem. I learned that very early on in my career, my first year as a coordinator going to West Virginia. I learned that, you know, you got to work crowd noise right from the beginning of camp and allow it to build and get guys used to it and adjusted to it. And it's the same way with the signals. To think you're going to be able to change your signals in a week, it's not going to happen. So as soon as that was announced that that's where he was going, we had to get with our guys and come up with new signals for everything that we do, either new signals or multiple signals for everything that we do. So it's, again, the fact that we did it right away, we've had plenty of time to get it done, and now our guys are comfortable.
Frank Bodani, York Daily Record.
And let me say one more thing. We've already done it the first 2 weeks, so that helps.
Frank?
Hey, James, how are you?
Hey, Frank, sorry about that.
Hey, no problem. Your cornerbacks, could you first maybe describe a little bit about what level Castro Field playing on to start the season, and how valuable is it to have two guys, your starters, that experience? Is there some ways that maybe they help you that we don't even maybe see easily or evidently out there always on the field?
Yeah, we think that we got two of the better corners, you know, in the country. We really do, not just the conference, but in the country. And they're playing with a lot of confidence right now. They're really playing well in both the run and pass game. And then, you know, as you guys have seen the first two games, not just at the corner position, but, you know, throughout our defense, we've been rotating a lot of guys. We've done that on offense as well. And that was the plan going into the first two games, to create depth, to gain some guys some experience so later in the year, you know, they've played and know what it takes to be successful at this level. So I think you'll probably see a little bit less rotation than you did the first two games. But those two guys are leading by example in terms of, you know, their approach to practice, their approach to games, their demeanor on the sideline, reinforcing things with Terry in the meeting rooms. They've been really impressive. I couldn't be happier for John Reed. He's a guy that's really built his entire career the right way. He's a man-made guy. He's earned everything that he's gotten. And I'm really happy for him. And I just think this year is just going to continue to grow. He is playing at a really high level right now and is extremely confident, can run with people, can tackle, has got tremendous instincts, and studies the game as good as anybody. So I'm really pleased with him. And then, you know, obviously Castro is really coming on. We thought that he would have a chance to have a big-time year for us this year. And so far it looks that way.
Joe Giuliano, Philadelphia Inquirer.
Hey, James, how are you?
Good, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. There's no future date for a Pitt-Penn State renewal of the rivalry at this time, and I think there are some fans worried that this could be the last game for a while or maybe ever. Do you see the series resuming at some point, and when could that be?
Yeah, I could. Again, it's hard to predict the future. I think we got to be creative in the ways that we look at it. One of the things that no one's really discussed is they play eight conference games. We play nine. That factors into scheduling philosophies. That has an impact on it. I don't think there's any doubt about it. I think you guys have heard me talk before at the Big Ten media days. I was asked a question. But to me, you know, I think if everybody was on a level playing field, if everybody was playing eight games or everybody was playing nine games or even everybody was playing 10 games, that would help. You look at a lot of the teams that are playing these historical, rivalry games, a lot of those schools and a lot of those conferences are playing eight games. The SEC is playing eight games. The ACC is playing eight games. That creates some challenges. I could see us possibly maybe doing a neutral site game with them. I think that's a possibility. You know, we could have discussions, but we got to be creative about it. And again, the challenge is with us that having nine conference game and them having eight. There's some problems with a home and home, but we're open. You know, we're open to having discussions, but it's got to equally make sense for both parties. It's got to make sense for Pitt. It's got to make sense for Penn State. I think this game will be sold out, but we had 104,000 last week. So we're talking about probably an increase of 5,000 or 6,000. So it needs to be consistent for both parties. But, you know, we're open to talking about all different concepts and options. Scott Sidwell's in the back. He handles that, and his phone is open for conversations.
Mike Gross, Lancaster Newspapers.
Good afternoon, James. How are you?
Good, Mike. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. It used to seem to me, at least, like the conventional wisdom was about the offensive line was you find your best five and you get them out there and you get them playing together. Now I'm getting the feeling, not just with Penn State, with college football generally, that you want to play more offensive linemen and worry about matchups because defensive lines are running guys in and out of the game. Is that changing a little bit, and is it changing the way you and Matt manage that group a little bit?
It's a good question. I would say it really just matters more about where is your sixth, seventh, eighth offensive lineman? If you look at your sixth and seventh offensive lineman, like we have with a combination that we have with the Dez Holmeses and the Rasheed Walkers and the Will Fries of the world, and then inside with Gonzo and Thorpe and Miranda, we look at all those guys as starters, then we want to play them. They've earned that. They deserve that. But if you're in a situation where there's a significant drop-off, then you want, obviously, to roll with your five as much as you possibly can. I also think the continuity of how those five guys have to work together is really different than almost any other position. Corners and safeties have to work together, but you're not talking about all four DBs having to be, you know, exactly on the same page. With the offensive line, all five have to be playing as one. So it is a little bit different, I think, at that position. Guys may argue that, but I believe that. So I think you'll see us rotating those guys in because they've earned it, and we think that those guys can go in and play at a high level and help us win. So there's going to be years where hopefully you got five that can play all year long. Some years you're going to have seven. Some years you may have nine or ten. We'll take it on a case by case, and it will be personnel driven. To make those decisions.
Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune.
And the other thing I'd probably add, I apologize, Donnie, is I think Caden Wallace can factor into that too as the year goes on. I don't know if he's the same conversation right now as those other two are, but I hope by the midpoint of the season he is a similar conversation as the other guys. Sorry about that.
Donnie?
How you doing, Jim?
Hey, Donnie.
Are you happy with how the running back rotation has looked so far, and what's going to be the key for Ricky Slade to be more of a factor moving forward?
Yeah, it's we felt, like I said, I think during camp and media days with you guys, that we have four guys that we think that we can play with and win with. Obviously, in week one, you saw a lot of flashes in that. Week two, we didn't see that as much. Again, it's not just the running backs. It's the O-line. It's the tight ends. It's all of it. It's all those things factoring in together. I don't think that picture is cleared up a whole lot more than it's been in the first couple of weeks. I think you'll see all four of those guys play on Saturday, and we're excited about all four of their futures.
Corey Geiger, Altoona Mirror.
Hi, James. How are you?
Good, Corey. How are you?
Can you evaluate what you saw, the improvement from start one to start two for Sean Clifford, just in terms of his confidence and being able to control all the things he needed to control?
Yeah, I don't know if it was dramatic. I just keep seeing him get better, get more confident, get more relaxed, get more assertive in some areas. And I think you're just going to see him, because the way he approaches things, him and Will Levis are just going to continue to get better. It's going to be gradual. Obviously, the area that jumps out to all of us, us as coaches, our quarterbacks, as well as the media, is third down. We got to be better on third down on both sides, offensive and defensive. We got to be better in that area. I think a good thing is we've been as one of the most explosive offenses in the country. The best offenses are getting most of their explosive plays on first and second down. But for us to take the next step, we need to continue to be explosive on first and second down and be more efficient on third down. And then we'll be, really difficult to deal with.
We'll open up to questions here in the room. Raise your hand and we'll get a mic to you.
Hey, James, how are you?
Good, Mark.
Could you tell us where Pat Freiermuth is at this point of his career compared to maybe the middle of last year, toward the end of last year? It seemed like he played a real key factor in that game.
He's a very mature kid. He's one of those guys that has earned the respect of his teammates, but he's really also aligned with the coaches in terms of what we want, what we expect, how we want the culture driven. He comes from a coaching family, so I think that factors into it as well. But he's been really good. He's bigger, he's stronger, he's leaner. He's more athletic. He's quicker. He's faster. All those types of things. And he's confident. Part of playing faster is not just that his body fat is dropped, but it's also because he's confident in what to do and how to do it. So, you know, I'm very pleased with him. We obviously feel like we got one of the best, if not the best, tight end in college football. And I think that will continue to grow. And really that unit, that group, we think is fantastic. And I think the thing about him is he does both things well, where you're going to find some tight ends that may put up gaudy numbers in the pass game, but they're not the same type of player, you know, in the run game. And that's where I think he's pretty unique. We're pretty excited about him.
James, what's the challenges of a noon kickoff from a recruiting perspective, and how can a weekend like this, when you expect to have 104, 107, 110,000 people here, impact recruits who do get to visit?
I'm sorry, I missed the last.
Yeah, part. Just what kind of impact can a crowd like you'll have for a game like this have, and then what are the challenges of a noon game for you guys from a recruiting perspective?
Yeah, obviously, I think an ideal situation for us. For us, for college football, for the Big Ten, for this town, is to have as many 3:30 games and 7 o'clock games as possible. I just think it's good for the Big Ten. I think it's good for college football. I know it's good for this town. It just makes it easier for people to get here. But we have such a passionate fan base. They'll be here no matter what. But obviously, it takes a different plan. Either you're going to have to come in the night before, or you're going to have to get up real early in the morning. And then to your point with recruiting, you know, obviously, you know, kids come, parents come, high school coaches come, they feel the electricity, they feel the energy in the stadium. They see guys making big plays on the field and having fun and enjoying their teammates and their coaches and playing an exciting style of football. All those things factor in, and people want to be a part of that. You know, people want to be a part of this fan base. People want to be a part of this community. All those things factor in. You know, how the young man at the hospital has been treated all week long. You know, we take a lot of pride in those things. How our fans support and cheer and never boo. All those things factor in. They factor into how people feel about Penn State, how they feel about Happy Valley, you know, all those things. It's amazing when we played USC in the Rose Bowl, and I don't want to bring that up because I know that game didn't end exactly the way we all like it to end. But you know where I got probably more emails than anything else since I've been here is when the young man from USC got hurt on the field and all our players surrounded him and took a knee. How many emails I got from people all over the country that are college football fans, how many USC fans and administrators reached out about that sign of respect, you know, from our team. So this is a place that winning is important, and we get that, but this is a place that it's so much more than winning. It's about the academics. This is not a win-at-all-cost place. This is a place that is going to do it and do it the right way. And I think that's what's made this place special for over 100 years, and that's what will continue to make this place special. And I think sometimes we probably need to be reminded of that. We're different, you know, and we always will be from that perspective.
James, since you teed up the topic, if you're talking about potential out-of-the-box ideas and creative scheduling.
You got one, Neil.
Well, I mean, it would be Altoona as a neutral site game is the only thing I can figure.
You know, everybody in Altoona is right now going, Neil! Yeah.
Right.
Do we have the venue?
If it's not Mansion Park, capacity of, I think, at least 10,000 with room for portable bleachers, where have you guys thought, where would be a neutral site game?
I don't know.
Tease them at West Virginia with that game, are you?
Yeah, no, you know, obviously I'm not sure. What I'm saying is I think some of the conference scheduling challenges, you just want it to be an even exchange. And the best way to do that is neutral site. Now, how do you do that? I'm not really sure where it makes sense for both parties, especially when we're both in the same state. So I get that, but I'm just talking in terms of making it make sense for both for both universities and both schools. That's an option. I'm not saying that's the answer, but that's one of many that we can look at and discuss. All I'm saying is we're not closing the door. We're open to a bunch of different discussions, whether that is home and home, whether that is neutral site, whatever that may be. But it sure would make it a lot easier if we were both playing 8 conference games or 9 conference games. That would help. That would help college football. That would help this game too.
James, I just wanted to get your thoughts on the challenge of defending or slowing Maurice French from Pittsburgh, not only as a receiver, but also in the return game.
Yeah, he's a dynamic player. We recruited him. He's a dynamic player. He's had a great career there. I think in a lot of ways, they go the way he goes. He's a momentum guy for him. He's an impact guy on offense and special teams in a lot of ways, like KJ is for us. We have to know where he is. It's a great challenge. We try to identify guys each week on defense. Here are a few guys that we know if we're not aware of where they're at, they can have a significant impact in the game. On special teams, who those players are. Same thing on defense. Our offense is saying who are the guys that we better have a plan for, whether it's a defensive end, whether it's a D tackle, whether it's a corner, whatever it is. You better have an awareness of who those guys are, and you better have a plan for them. And he's one of those guys. There's no doubt about it. It's not just about the scheme and scheme alone. It's personnel and scheme. And a lot of times it probably is or should be more about the personnel.
Hey, Coach, how are you?
Good. How are you, John?
I'm good. Hey, I think you've talked about this in the past, having family in Western Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. growing up in Eastern Pennsylvania, being a kid, when you were a kid, this rivalry was at its zenith. What does it mean? What does it mean to you? Or what are your memories from it?
Yeah, the hard part is when I really got into college football, really got into it, watching it and studying it and things like that. When I was young, I was a go out and play all day, not really sit in and watch sports. This game, you got to remember, most of our players before – the last 4 years had never even seen, for me, obviously, I grew up just outside of Philadelphia, but my dad is from the Hill District. All my Thanksgivings, all my Christmases, most of my summers were spent there. My grandfather drove a jitney. He cleaned out a historical jazz bar at night called the Crawford Grill every night, which is a famous, it's not there anymore, in the Hill like it was. My best friend comes up to every single game, Keith Gardner. I call him Mighty. You guys have probably seen him around. I literally didn't know his name for probably 15 years. I thought it was Mighty. My cousin Karen works at Pitt. Works on Pitt's campus. So I got a lot of ties there, in that part of the state and specifically in that city. I remember being in the Veterans Hospital overlooking the stadium, looking in the stadium when the stadium was on campus. There's a lot of history. With these two schools, obviously with this state. And I got tremendous respect for the University of Pittsburgh, for their program, for their history, all the great players that they've had come out of there. I also think there's aspects, and people say, that's college football. I think there's also aspects of this game that bring out the worst of both fan bases and populations. And I know some people may say that's good. I don't know if that's good. I think we can have a great game without all that other stuff. We're looking forward to playing the game on Saturday, but there's no doubt about it. I got friends and family that are going to be going back there. But I also got friends and family, I'll admit, that this game, they support Penn State, but the rest of the year they're going to support Pitt, which I'm I'm perfectly fine with people supporting their hometown team. Jamal Griffin, who used to work here, I make fun of him all the time because, like, he literally every sport he's got a different team in a different part of the country. Like, he's from Baltimore. His football team was the Cowboys. Had never been to Dallas in his life, but that was his team. I'd make fun of him and say Lakers was his basketball, but it wasn't. But you know, I think you know, you support your in-state team.
Hey James, it's because the Cowboys are on at 4 o'clock. Can't get away from it.
That's right.
You mentioned earlier how explosive
you're a
you
Cowboys
are.
Fan.
No, Lord, no, yeah. No.
I don't know if you were endorsing that. That's
no, I'm a Buffalo guy.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Everyone feels bad now.
That's Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's Chris.
We're everywhere.
And we have strong ties to Buffalo with the Pegulas. So, yeah. So
you just don't know we're around. We're quiet about it. You mentioned how explosive you've been, especially on first and second down. How do you balance wanting to take shots and wanting to be explosive versus, you know, staying on schedule? And I guess just the philosophy of how many shots you want to take in a game, and how does Ricky's personality as a play caller kind of factor into all that?
I think that's a really good question because I will tell you that's how most coaches were probably raised in the industry, is about staying on schedule. Unless you come from certain family trees, most people were about staying on schedule, creating manageable third down situations. What are you trying to do on first down? I'm trying to get four. What are you trying to get on second down? I'm trying to get half so I can create manageable third down situations. What am I trying to do on third down? Obviously convert, fourth down convert, ultimately score touchdowns, be efficient in the red zone, all those types of things. But I think as people have really got into analytics and studying what is the most impactful thing to winning football games, there are two stats that dramatically are ahead of everything else, and that's creating explosive plays on offense, it's eliminating explosive plays on defense, and it's the turnover battle. Those two things. In the old days, what was the other one that everybody talked about? Time of possession. Well, that is shown to not really be as big of a factor when it comes specifically to the greatest impact on winning. So, you know, I think it's changed. People were raised on staying on schedule. But the reality is you better be aggressive and you better push the ball down the field. There's a fine line to those stats because I think some of those analytics people tell you should go for every single fourth and one, whether you're on the minus one or the plus one. So, you know, I think, like I've told you guys before, I think it is a valuable piece of information, but that's what it is. It's a piece of information. It's not the end-all be-all.
Hey, James, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Week one, you faced a team that was preparing two quarterbacks to play. Last week, it was a guy who had 10 passes in his college career. To have someone like Pickett, who has the more extensive track record, what does that allow your defense to do in preparation?
Well, I think last week was a really interesting one because literally we all saw what, in my opinion, we all saw a high-level quarterback for Buffalo that I think is going to win them a bunch of games. Was really good in the run game, was really good in the pass game, is big, strong, good decision maker. They obviously went into game one saying they weren't going to show that and only threw the ball 10 times in that game. So there was a lot of question marks and mystery of what we were going to get in game two. Did they not throw the ball because they didn't feel like he was ready? Or were they holding something back and saving? I think we found out that they were saving. You know, obviously with Pickett, we got a lot more film to watch and be aware of and to study, you know, not just from this season, but from last season as well. So, that's helpful. I think obviously the more information you have in any decision-making process in any industry, the better decisions you can make. You know, so for us on special teams, we typically go back 5 years studying guys. On offense and defense, it's usually about 4 games to get as much information as we can, and then we'll go even further if we need to for similar opponents. On special teams, you usually go deeper because you have so many less reps. You know, so many less reps. So, obviously, I think there's value in that. We got a better idea of who he is.
James, you mentioned making halftime adjustments with the younger team, which is very reminiscent to the 2016 team, kind of the similar storyline early and later in that year because they were pretty much always a second-half team for the most part. What's the biggest challenge in getting a team to a point where it can make adjustments in the first half? And did you learn anything from that season where that was sort of the ongoing thing?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is getting guys, young guys that are on the sideline, that are emotional, that there's offense going on, there's jumbotrons going on, the fans are going crazy, and you're on the sideline with a grease board talking about what they're doing. And where I probably need to do a better job of articulating this, it's not just the coaches. It's not just the coaches making adjustments to the players. The first thing is getting feedback from the players. And what's amazing is as players get older, the more accurate information you get. Right now with Michael Bennett, when he comes to the sideline, he can tell us exactly what's happening, and it aligns with exactly what they're telling us in the booth. Because sometimes what we're hearing in the booth isn't exactly what's happening. So when you're able to connect those two things, so making the adjustments is getting the information from the players and then also being able to make the adjustments based on what's being told in the booth. And then getting them to digest that information and be able to translate it onto the field when the jumbotrons are going, the noise is going, the play's going, there's noise and fans and stuff everywhere. And as you know, in some ways it may be better to make the adjustments, have all of them bring their cell phones and do it that way on the sideline because they're not used to the eye-to-eye contact and conversations. And I just think that comes with time. It comes with time to get really valuable, accurate information from them about what's happening, and then also for us to be able to take the information from them and what we're being told in the booth and then make the adjustments. Because the other information is, are they playing how we thought they were playing? Okay, on first and second down, this is what we expect them to be. Third down, this is what we expect them to be. Red zone, this is what we expect them to be. Now, early in the game, are they playing to what our studies have showed us, or do they have a game plan that they've been working on all summer specifically for this game, and they're going to show us things that we have not seen before? And you need to find that information out as soon as you possibly can. That's why a lot of people that script the opening drive of a game, well, why do you do that? Because you think these are your best plays in the game. But it's also, you want to line up an empty once to find out as soon as possible, are they lining up to empty how we thought? Are they lining up to FIB formation into the boundary the way we thought? So if you can show all these different 12 personnel, 11 personnel, 10 personnel, whatever it may be, now you can find out quickly, are they playing how we thought they would play? If you don't line up an empty until the second quarter, you don't know if they're following the empty plan that we have. So a lot of times when people script, they're scripting out all those situations to find out as soon as you can, are they playing how we thought they were going to play in all these different situations? Does that make sense? And all that information you're trying to get so we can make great decisions, but you're also trying to get the information from the players and then give them valuable information back that they can digest and put to work as quickly as possible on the field.
James, you've been in the coaching profession for a long time now. Have you ever been in a situation before where you had a veteran player, transfer to a future opponent like this? And do you think, can that have a big impact on the game?
Well, obviously the profession has changed. I mean, the graduate transfer rule changed a few years ago. This year what happened, with everybody across the country with the new rules and the transfer portal and those things, it's changed things. This is exactly why for years coaches were against, the transferring within conferences or games on your schedule. I think the problem with it is that, as we all know, some people abused it and they were denying kids everywhere that they wanted to go. And that shouldn't happen. But what happened was we overcorrected. We went from being able to deny them everywhere to now not being able to deny them anywhere. So it's problematic. I mean, that's why people have no competes and things like that. But it is what it is, and if that's in the best interest of the student athlete, then we'll adjust. Then we'll adjust, which is what we've done. We adjust as soon as it happened. It was we need to adjust. We need to adjust right now. We need to adjust right now.
James, you mentioned how many of your players had not grown up with the Penn State Pitt matchup, but what have you seen over the last 3 years, with as far as the crowds, the two at Heinz Field, and the one here two years ago, that has maybe, what have you seen from that, and what's your take on how it has been reignited the last couple of years?
Where are you from?
I'm from PA.
How old are you?
I'm 21.
Had you ever seen a Pitt Penn State game?
No.
Never. And that's kind of the same what our entire locker room was. But the games have been awesome. I mean, the games have been awesome. I mean, that first game was an unbelievable game. The environment, I think we had the largest crowd in Heinz Field history for any sporting event. Isn't that correct? I mean, that's pretty cool. You know, that's pretty cool. We've had environments and crowds here that we have probably two or three times a year, but good, really good. Been very competitive. You know, again, there's some things like I mentioned before that I don't know if it necessarily brings out the best in both fan bases and both teams and both staffs at times, including ours and myself. But there's no doubt about it. I get it, and I understand the significance of it. A lot of it is just bragging rights. People going back to work on Monday. You know, people going, you know, back, like I mentioned, you know, going back to Pittsburgh, you know, going back to see family and friends. It's all those types of things. It just hits a little bit closer to home. It's probably a great expression.
We have time for two more.
Hey, Neil communicates with us with his phone, too. We're looking at the accumulation of reps for this defense. And you guys had that three-game stretch last year where there was like 88-plus snaps. Was there anything that you guys could take away from that? I mean, I know you rotate a lot on Saturday, but them getting up there in the 90s again, is that worrisome, or how do you try and balance
that? Yeah, obviously you want as least amount of plays as possible, but that's also where the rotation helps. And we had a bunch of guys in game one play like 17 or 20 plays, you know, and then you get to week two and the number spiked. But that was a combination of both. That was a combination. Our defense has got to get off the field. That's a combination of our offense has got to stay on the field. You know, all those types of things. And then you can't have a turnover on special teams as well. That doesn't help as well. So it's all of those things. But, yeah, we want the number on offense and defense to be as low as possible. You know, I don't know if that's necessarily possible. One's gonna have to have a little bit more in the game. We'd prefer it to be our offense than our defense. But that's where the rotation is so important, because even in a game where we played 90 plays on defense, you know, we still – we're able to do a pretty good job with our rotation to help with some of those things. And we've made some adjustments this week, too. We've moved some guys around. And I know the next question is, who do we move around?
One last question for you, James. Last 2 years, you've had pretty good wins in this series. Has that helped you recruiting in Pittsburgh? And then two-part to that, how big is this game recruiting-wise compared to the rest of your home schedule? I assume Michigan's pretty big. Is this number two?
Yeah. You know, again, that's a conversation that I hear and see a lot, and a lot of people ask me. I just got asked that at an interview before coming in here and got that same question. And you probably can speak on this as well. I mean, you know, obviously winning helps. The environment helps. But I don't think one game swings you. I don't think kids are choosing Penn State because of one game. I don't think kids are choosing another school because of one game. Do guys want to be a part of winning programs? Yes. Do guys want to play in front of 107,000? Yes. You know, do guys want to go to a school where they can get a great education and their parents, that's important to their parents? Yeah, all those things factor in. But I don't think one game, really trumps that. I mean, you look, you know, that year in 2016 that I think we lost, we had a pretty good season. We had pretty good recruiting classes that year and the year after that. I don't know if it's as significant as people may think. Do we want to win the game? Yeah. Do we think it helps? Yeah. But I don't think it's the end all be all.
Thank you, Coach.
Thanks.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.